The opinions and commentary expressed on the program you're about to hear do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or its advertisers, but it may weigh heavily on what's between your ears. It's the Krieger Files with Dave Krieger, brought to you by a network of radio stations who care about the communities they serve. Alexa, turn on the Krieger Files.
Okay, here we are on our Monday segment, and I'm going to be out the next couple of days, so you're going to be, for those of you who missed our Jeff Thigpen interview, he is the Register of Deeds for Guilford County, North Carolina, and he's going to replay on tomorrow, Fred Dyshefsky, who joins me now on the show. You're going to be able to hear that, and we'll be back Thursday live, but I want to give everybody the heads up in case you hear this. The next two broadcasts are going to be pre-recorded. Just so you know, I'd like to give you the heads up on that. I posted, my lovely wife just posted a picture of me and Kash Patel on my Facebook page. For those who don't believe that I actually met the guy and talked to him at great length, he was selling a children's book at the time, which we bought a copy of. And we're going to try to get him on the show, as a matter of fact, since he now became former President Trump's FBI director nominee. I think that'll be a massive shakeup there. Before we get to Fred, we're going to be talking about all sorts of things having to do with the economy. We've got a major recall right now that's been announced by the FDA, and recalls move to the top of the list. This is a vegetable product from Four Earth Farms. They're recalling multiple brands of organic vegetable medley, conventional vegetable medley, and organic whole carrots. This is from Four Earth. It comes in like market side vegetable medley. They're repackaged. You have to watch this. There are several brands there, and if you have access to the internet, you want to Google it or use DuckDuckGo, whatever it takes to find out about this. But Four Earth Farms, based in Commerce, California, claims now that the products may be contaminated with E. coli bacterium, and so we definitely want to get this out there. The recalled products were distributed in several states, including New Hampshire, Minnesota, Illinois, Pennsylvania, Florida, California, and Colorado, sold through both retail stores and distributors, so you don't know whether or not it's your store. The best buy dates are November 2nd of this year. And so you got Wild Harvest, Market Side, Four Earth Farms, Grimway. They were distributed to Albert's Organics, Walmart, OK Produce, UNFI, Kennedy Produce, and Sprouts Farmers Market. If you see any of these things with a November 2nd, 2024 sell-by date, and it starts September 7th and runs through November 2nd. So if you have one of these sell-by dates, get rid of them. You need to sanitize your surfaces because this bacteria is nothing to fool with, all right? So we had to get that out of the way this morning. Fred Dyshefsky, welcome to the show, sir, USCoinCapital.com.
Good morning, Dave.
Yeah, we give you the fanfare. Hey, so we're talking about the economy. And by the way, for those of you who are interested, because we've got an ongoing battle right now between Trump and the cartels and Trump and Canada. And, of course, as you know, over the weekend, Trudeau went down to Mar-a-Lago and kissed the ring. He did not want this 25% tariff. And Trump said, hey, look, stop the crap at the border and we'll forget about the tariff. Gee, and he did the same thing with Mexico, and I'm not sure exactly how that's going to work out. What do you think of these tariffs? You think it's going to screw with our economy, Fred?
Well, tariffs are, you know, inevitably a tax on the public. But they do serve an economic purpose. So, you know, what Trump has been addressing, and especially in his first term, we had become rather unwieldy in the relationship between our trade agreements with these foreign nations, because over the course of the previous presidents before the first Trump administration, we had been yielding more and more to try to encourage commerce and theoretically, by virtue of that, more democracy around the world by providing the foreign countries with better access to selling their products to the U.S. And what happened is that we ended up importing a tremendous amount of products that American companies also produce, which created competition. And unfortunately, because American companies have higher expenses than third world nations that don't have to follow the same kind of regulations that U.S. companies do, that those products were cheaper. And they flooded the country to a point where there was a tremendous, disbalance, if you will, imbalance between the way that we dealt with foreign nations. Trump really set the stage and said, this is so out of control. What's happening is that all these foreign countries are benefiting by dumping their cheaper, less quality products in America and forcing companies in America to have to fight that kind of competition. So the idea of the tariff is to even the playing field.
I get that. But like you said, it's going to somehow, some way it's going to pass on to consumers. But I think the, right now, as I understand, China, has got some issues. Their currency is starting to weaken. And of course, you know, we've got this issue with Trump now embracing Bitcoin as opposed to CBDCs, which I don't know that they're going to go anywhere right now. I know there's a lot of people out there that are panic stricken. But see, when it comes to Bitcoin, to me, it's just Ether. It's not the same kind of investment that you deal with. I mean, Ether is a gas, okay?
Yes.
And what they use Ether for is they put you to sleep with it. You know, and so, I mean, we're just inundated with this idea that Bitcoin is going to replace the dollar. I mean, you got one fiat type of a system of dealing in some sort of ether currency versus another fiat, which is an actual physical dollar bill that people still haven't come to grips with, is nothing more than a debt note.
It is, unfortunately, that.
Your take on that?
Yep, there's no question about it. The way that we and other countries are using currencies to conduct commerce has changed dramatically. Nobody uses a sound currency anymore, so it affords a lot of this, you know, instability and lots of questions about what is real, what is actually valuable, and what defines that value. So when we go back to the idea of the tariff, you know, so what's supposed to happen now is if we make it more expensive for the foreign countries to sell their products domestically here, we are supporting the U.S. companies that have that as competition. But that does mean that they're going to have to raise prices. So in order for it to be more competitive and more even, the likelihood is that it's going to cost consumers more to buy the foreign products. So if now, for example, you know, your family says, well, I could buy option A, a product built in the U.S., or I could buy option B, a product, the same product built in China. It's a little bit cheaper. It's a little less quality, but maybe I want to save the money. The reason that product is cheaper is because of these imbalanced tariffs. If that evens out, that will raise prices. And in the end, I hate to say this, but it is inflationary, because when cost of goods and services go up to the public and the value of their currency does not, that gap between the two has got to be compensated for. And that means we have to work harder or more to make the same amount of money. Now, when it comes to how we handle this in terms of which currency is used, you know, Trump has stated that he is, you know, getting behind the concept of the Bitcoin to the idea where he's not going to dismiss it. He thinks, you know, the U.S. maybe should take a position in it, and he obviously has some faith. The thing is, and I've talked about this extensively, about, you know, what defines the value of Bitcoin is really a relationship between a like-minded group of people who look at something that does have a limited number of existing examples and therefore assigns value to that. And, of course, that's a questionable concept, but if people go along with it, it's going to continue to work. The problem is, fundamentally, there's really nothing underneath it that establishes its value, which means it's subject to dramatic change. Now, when you mention, is it different than what I do? I think it couldn't be more different than what I do, because, you know, you're talking about something, like you say, is the ether. It's, you know, out there in the open world, but doesn't exist tangibly. Whereas the entire purpose of the gold and silver coins that I've been working with for 40 years has been to try to provide the public with sound money, real, tangible currency, something that actually has its own internal value, not because somebody assigns the value to it, but because what it's made of itself actually has value. So I think that separates the gold and silver coins dramatically from the concept of Bitcoin.
Yeah, for sure it does. Well, see, the problem that we've had here, and we always seem to have a problem because I'm constantly bringing it up, and that is we have put our faith in currency that doesn't work. It's very unstable, and everybody's predicting it's going to crash. You've got Russia trying to fight it with BRICS. They've got a huge consortium of countries that have gotten together and supported BRICS. And BRICS, as far as fighting the dollar, what's your take on it these days since there seems to be a push against the U.S. dollar?
Oh, no question about it. So, you know, we've weaponized the U.S. dollar over the past couple of decades, particularly in the past 5 or 10 years. In other words, we've used the U.S. dollar to try to curtail political efforts that we're not aligned with. So we use it against our quote-unquote economic enemies by manipulating its value. And we have forced the U.S. dollar on foreign countries for decades. So they're not really happy with the idea that they don't have an option. They don't have a choice.
Yeah,
you know, they're
sure.
doing this at gunpoint.
Yep. Yeah, at gunpoint. I love it. We'll be back with more discussion here with Fred Jaszewski from U.S. Coin Capital after the break. Stay with us.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at CSPOA.org. That's CSPOA.org.
With inflation constantly chewing away at the value of paper money, perhaps it's time for Americans to bite back. Ownership of gold and silver coins provides great counterbalance to weaker paper money value. U.S. Coin Capital provides physical gold and silver coins. You can reach us directly at 1-800-878-2646, uscoincapital.com.
Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
From the ranks of the disenfranchised, it's the government's worst nightmare. It's the Krieger Files.
Okay, back in the saddle here at 18 minutes after the hour. Fred Jaszewski with USCoinCapital.com is joining us here. By the way, Fred is a numismatic gentleman, member of the American Numismatic Association. That means he knows his stuff about gold and silver coins, and he's also one of those, what we call an MS grader. I mean, he's one of the guys that's got one of these distinguished awards where he can go out and do an MS, which, you know, it's like a mint score, you know, how wonderful this coin that you're going to buy from Fred is. You might want to explain for those of you that don't understand what MS is, Fred, where are we going with that?
Sure. So what you're referring to is basically the grading of coins. And that really comes down to a couple of things. The first thing, you know, when you say grading, it's just like it was in school, you know, it's a test. So what we're doing is examining a coin, and we're examining it first for its authenticity. You know, is the damn thing real? Let's start there. So what a professional numismatist like myself has been studying is the various coins, the way that they were minted, and understanding the knowledge of what the government did when they produced coins to be able to separate the various types of coins, whether they're actually indeed real, with minted by the U.S. government. And then secondly, there are coins that definitely have a value more than merely their metal. So now we deal a lot with two ranges of gold and silver coins. There are the very, very common type, and this seems to be the most popular of late. And that would be things like the old silver quarters and dimes and half dollars, or what's commonly called junk silver. And these are generally circulated dimes and quarters and half dollars, minted up to and including the year 1964, because at that point, up to that year, they were actually made of silver. So when it comes to grading those coins, we generally don't go through an extensive process of looking at their quality. We simply are identifying them as being real. Secondly, there are those that are very scarce. Some of the dates that gold and silver coins were produced, and this goes back to 1792 when the first American gold and silver coins were minted, some of them are extremely rare. So rare that you can't buy them like you can the old dimes and quarters in large quantity, but you're literally looking at coins one at a time. Now, in those cases, the condition of those coins is actually a big part of their value. And I think the easiest way to think about this is consider, let's say, an old rare car. One that has hundreds and hundreds of thousands of miles on it is going to be worth less than one with 20 miles on it, for the same reason that it the one with the lower mileage is closer to its original mint condition. So when it comes to coins, they've actually come up with a specific scale to grade the coin, and we can refer to that scale, and generally it goes from 1 through 70. It was a system developed by Dr. Sidney Sheldon back in the early 1980s, and it was effectively designed to be able to clearly communicate the quality of a coin. So when a coin has been professionally graded, it's going to be assigned a number somewhere between 1, the lowest possible grade, and 70, which in theory would be perfect. Now, most original coins will never be available in perfect condition. The only perfect coins we've ever seen are the most recently minted because, of course, they have all the modern technology to produce them. But original coins, the difference in grades, one grade to the next, can be tens of thousands of dollars in some cases. So the grading of coins when it comes to rarity is essential. And for those coins that achieve a 60 or higher on this 1 to 70 scale, we refer to those as mint condition, or also called mint state. That's where the MS comes from. And then they will have a number, like MS61 or MS63. And this is an assignment of the relative value of that coin compared to one that theoretically would be perfect. And all of the mint state coins have one characteristic in common. They are all what we call uncirculated, meaning that all of the details that were originally punched into that coin surface still exist. None of them have worn out. You have to have 100% of every detail originally minted on a coin for it to achieve a status of mint state. But there are higher mint states, 60, 61, 62, because those refer to the coins that have fewer and fewer little nicks and surface scratches that are visible on every coin. So you may have a mint condition coin that has a lot of scratches on it because surface scratches and after minting contact marks are not the same as wear. Wear is a much more significant variable in the value of a coin. Again, this refers to coins that have value in different conditions because of their scarcity. For the most common coins, the grading is not an essential part of their value. We do actually have to pay to have coins professionally graded, and any coins that we offer as a company that are valuable because of their condition are always independently graded, and that's essential. And the service we use is called the Numismatic Guarantee Corp, or NGC. They grade the coin, seal it in a tamper-proof holder, and assign a grade number. This way, it's not the dealer that's selling the coin to a person or looking to buy a coin who is the same party that also would establish its grade. You can understand that would be a obviously conflict of interest.
Sure. Now, what would be the incentive for somebody to buy and hold these kinds of coins as opposed to junk silver? Because junk silver right now, I mean, I've seen some silver dollars that people used to, remember the old days, they'd carry them around in their pocket and they would use them as stress coins and they would rub and rub and rub on the silver until there wasn't anything left on the face, which means that, hey, this stuff is degradable, but people seem to think that silver, it was a plus to have it there because, you know, a little silver in the body was always a good thing, not the same as colloidal silver, but I'm trying to put the incentive between one of these numismatic ratings versus somebody going out and just saying, hey, I want to buy $1,000 worth of junk silver to keep in my portfolio. I mean, there's got to be a real incentive behind holding the rare numismatic stuff. I mean, what's your take on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So they almost serve similar purposes, but different in the way that we're approaching it. So for those that are acquiring the low-grade junk silver that are not graded professionally, because, again, if I'm selling a quarter that's worth, you know, $7, I'm certainly not going to spend $35 with a grading service to prove that it's a, you know, a 20 on the grading scale, because it doesn't matter whether it will be graded or not. The coin had the same value, so there'd be no point in grading that coin. Now, the rare ones that are worth grading, the reason that people tend to accumulate them is because of their growth over years. They tend to appreciate dramatically over the course of time, because these are legitimately scarce items. And just like rare cars, rare guitars, rare artwork, there is a collectible market for these that has already existed for coins that goes back to the very first ones that were minted in the 1790s. By the 1800s, there were already people who were looking to save the very first U.S. coins that ever came out, and they were already hard to find even by the 1820s. So mint condition examples that have been professionally certified and proven to be both authentic and of a specific quality become very valuable, and over the years become more valuable, especially as we print more and more paper money. So the idea of the rare coin for those that invest in those is a long-term investment, the same way one might buy rare art. The people that buy the, let's call it junk silver, again, I hate that expression, but it is commonly used in the industry, you know, the circulated dimes and quarters, their rationale is usually slightly different. Not only are they looking for appreciation, but they're also looking for something that's spendable in case of economic disaster.
Yeah,
so if you had a $20,000 coin, it seems unrealistic that you're going to be able to use that to buy a loaf of bread at your local supermarket if something happens to the U.S. dollar and people dispute that it has any value, and you now have to conduct commerce on a regular basis. That's where junk silver comes into play. You're going to spend those dimes and quarters and half dollars because they're affordable, they're incremental items, and they're perfect to be used to conduct day-to-day commerce. The rare coins are the things you put away for your future, for your retirement, for your kids. If you have young children that are going to go to college in 10 or 15 years, you know, you can put away rare coins today that could be worth tons more by the time they get old enough to use them. And that is the rationale behind them. And that interest in owning those rare coins has been around for like 200 years. So there are certain coins that are worth literally tens of millions of dollars individually, because of how scarce they are. I've watched, you know, the rarest coin sell at an auction for $4 million, show up 3 years later, sell for $7.9 million, show up 5 years later, sell for $12 million, and then recently sell again for $19 million. So at $4 million, it might have seemed absurd to buy a single coin. Where think about the huge quantity of dimes and quarters for $4 million you could have had. But instead, somebody decided that it was a better investment long-term to buy that one power coin. Now, I like the idea of mixing these things with larger portfolios for those that are spending, you know, 50 or 100 or several hundred thousand dollars in their coin portfolios. Well, it makes sense to have a 15 or 20 or $25,000 coin. If you're spending $5 or $10,000, it's less important. It seems much more appropriate, if you will, in my opinion, to not lock yourself into one coin if that's all you have. So if you're spending $5,000 and you only had a single $5,000 coin, what happens if you need $1,000? You can't cut a piece off the coin and deal with it. You have to sell the whole thing or nothing. With the junk silver, you have lots of flexibility. You can sell bags of silver dimes, which are 10,000 of them, and that would bring you $29,000 today. Or you could sell a single dime one at a time for, you know, the $3 or $4 that it costs to buy a dime. So you have flexibility. So they serve different purposes. But the answer to your question is it's long-term growth that attracts people to the ultra-rare coins, plus the fascination of owning things that are, honestly, they're really kind of cool.
Yeah, they are. Well, there you have it. Fred Yashevsky is going to stick around. He's going to come back after the news break, of course, folks. We will replay this again on Wednesday, but in the meantime, enjoy the news. We'll be right back.
Taking back America, one consumer at a time. It's the Krieger Files.
Okay, speaking of consumer issues, folks, Fred Deshefsky with uscoincapital.com. That's 1-800-878-2646 for those of you who want to contact Fred and invest in yourself by doing some purchasing, you know, increase your purchasing power. You always want to know, given the fact that Americans spent more money on Black Friday compared to last year. Now, MasterCard thinks it's going to be a strong holiday shopping season, and now we've got Cyber Monday.
Oh, I think it's going to be huge.
Oh, well, they're saying that U.S. retail sales, excluding automotive, 3.4%. But now they're saying that online sales, I mean, I have been inundated with emails, as I'm sure all of you have, if you've got internet, that, you know, everybody wants to kick the can down the road, and they're looking at Cyber Monday producing a new single-day record of $993 million in buy now, pay later sales. Now, this is like consumers kicking the can down the road, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, get to finance your purchases. I mean, this is a popular product, concept when it comes to the holidays. I mean, a lot of people, you know, don't have the choice. It's that or nothing for them in order to get what they want for their families. But this is an idea that, again, the consumer has to decide whether or not it's appropriate. You know, when you're paying high interest on devaluing assets, that's generally not a good economic plan. But I think the, size of the blowout of the economic reports coming out of what was Black Friday and what will be the end of today, Cyber Monday, is going to turn out to be absolutely staggering. I think I saw $11 billion for Friday. I think that was the number that came out. I mean, these two are just going to be staggering numbers. So the consumer is strong, and the consumer wants to spend money. They want to feel, you know, optimistic. I think there's definitely a change in the psychology of people with the president-elect coming in. I think a lot of people believe that, you know, there is a better chance for the economy to be stronger under this newer administration. And with that kind of positive, you know, feeling moving forward, that encourages spending. So I expect this to be one absolute blowout Cyber Monday.
That is amazing. I won't be one of them. Trust me. I'm really holding back. I'm looking at silver, investing in more silver over time here, Fred. And by the way, I forgot to mention there's another recall involving New York-based Hanson Brook Farms, who are pulling batches of eggs from the market. Oh, salmonella. Got a salmonella. It's got the Kirkland signature brand name on it. Ouch. So anyway, aside from that, if I didn't mention it, people would be calling the show, giving me a hard time. And we don't want that. Now, and not only that, but now we've got New York City paying Pakistani-owned Roosevelt Hotel owner $220 million to house illegal aliens while Hurricane Helene victims are without homes, heat, clothing. And I mean, you know, I really think that our priorities are in the wrong place here. And, you know, when people are looking at trying to invest in themselves, I wonder, the supply of silver and gold right now, you keep a pulse on the market, and what does it look like right now?
Yeah, I keep a careful pulse on that because it has been wild in the last couple of years. I probably have mentioned on previous shows that at one point it became so difficult for dealers across the country to get physical pre-65 dimes, quarters, and half dollars that the premiums over their metal value began to expand. And it kept growing and growing and growing. At one point, I think the top was $8.50 over spot per ounce. So if you think about it, every 50-cent piece, about $4 and change in its price, was based on this additional premium that we had to pay over melt just to get the coin. Now, those premiums have been bouncing around all year, and every time we had a run-up in the price of silver very rapidly, there was also some short-term profit-taking. So a lot of people were selling large volumes of coins back into the market. And that forced the dealers to kind of compress their premiums. And this back and forth has been happening all year. But where we ended up is we ended up with the lowest premiums we've had in years on the pre-65 silver dimes and quarters and halves. It was down to literally zero last week. It's been averaging about 20 cents over spot instead of $8.50, which means it's much more affordable today for somebody who wants to get into silver now than it would have been even a year and a half ago. Even though the price of silver is a little bit higher, they've kind of evened out to a point where there's a really good buying opportunity for those that would like to come into silver. I did put together a little holiday special, something that I think people might be able to utilize both for their own personal investments, but it's also something that could be utilized as holiday gifts. I've got a grouping of 20 of the original United States peace dollars. These are silver dollars, 1 ounce size, minted between 1921 and 1935. They're all in the grade called AU, and that is just below that mint state condition we were talking about. So these have the slightest little hint of wear that a coin can exhibit. I mean, just a little bit, tiniest bit of detail on one hairline on Miss Liberty's head is not visible. That's all it takes. I packaged 20 of those together and included a 1/10 ounce gold American Eagle $5 coin, which is like about the size of a dime, and it's 1/10 ounce of gold. The two together, the 1/10 ounce gold coin and the 20 peace dollars, is $1,050, $1,050. And I think this is a great way for either an entry way for people coming into the market new, or, you know, people want to use these things as gifts, giving away a, you know, a pretty bright silver dollar is a wonderful way to do that for the holidays.
But the 1/10 ounce is a $5 gold coin.
Yes, they actually gave these things denominations when they came out in 1986 with this new American Eagle Gold program. It was a little strange because they did this in order to give them a sort of status that would avoid some of the regulations that apply to the bullion world. So the 1 ounce American Eagle, they gave it a $50 status, and that was the same size as the original $20 gold pieces from the 1930s was. 1 ounce, though, now they called it 50. They made a half ounce size. They called it a $25, but then they made a quarter ounce size. Did they call it $12.50? No, they called it $10. And then they made a 10th ounce size and they called that $5. So these denominations are a little different than the original denominations assigned to older coins before 1933. These are more like, you know, the kind of things that an actor gets when he gets an arbitrary degree from a college he didn't attend, an honorary degree. So he never actually attended the school, but they give him an honorary degree. The same thing is basically with these denominations on these American Eagle gold coins. It's an honorary status that it's a $5 gold coin. It's really not relevant. What's relevant is its weight. It's basically a weight item. So we have a 10th-ounce gold American Eagle and 20 of the just barely circulated, so AU, peace dollars, and again, that's $1,050, $1,050.
That is a heck of a deal. Folks, look, if you're looking and investing in yourself and you're listening to the show, you need to pick up the phone, call 1-800-878-2646 and order the goodies. And I'll tell you, you know, if you've got to use a credit card, Fred does take them. So understand this is how it works. I buy my stuff from Fred. You need to buy your stuff from Fred. You're telling me right now that spot price is only 20 cents over spot per ounce?
Yep.
The premium?
The silver
the premium
coins
is,
right now,
yeah.
The premiums are just down to 20 cents over. That's our cost now, where it had been $8.50. So basically, I can offer the dimes and quarters and half dollars for what would have been about the same price that silver was when it was around $26 an ounce, even though silver's now 30 and change, almost $31 today. And
wow.
By the way, the price of gold is up year to date. And just think about this for a minute. The price of gold is up year to date 26%.
Wow.
I mean, that is a huge increase, right? Actually, 28% now. It just went to 26.71. So we're up about 28% from the 1st of January this year. And I know that people out there trying to make money, you know, it's hard to see anything that gains more than the 4.5 or 5% that's offered in the standard, you know, government instruments or CDs at the bank. And with that, of course, comes all the inflationary problems. So again, this is why I love gold and silver as a counterbalance to weaker paper money, but also as a method of diversification, which is always how I've seen it. I don't believe and never have in replacing all of one's paper money with gold and silver. I think the people that promote the market that way are making a mistake. I just think this is a method of trying to diversify, because we have to recognize that whatever the government plans to do, it's already $35 trillion in the hole. We're adding a trillion every 100 days to the national debt. And that puts us, and I've said this for more than a year and a half, almost 2 years now, we're going to be $50 trillion in debt before the 2030 year comes around.
And, of course, you know, it is. And they kick the can down the road. I mean, this is what they're doing. Congress is famous for that. And they keep wanting to spend, 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 even though we have the Doge duo that's going to go out there and allegedly trim $2 million off of things. We'll be back to discuss that in our last segment here with Fred Jastrzebski from U.S. Coin Capital. After these short words, we'll be right back. Stay with us.
If Planned Parenthood were what they publicly declare themselves to be, they would welcome transparency. We all know why they hide, because we know what they hide. We can confirm federal judges who follow the Constitution rather than reverse engineer their preferred policy outcomes. The truth about abortion is spreading because of advances in medical imaging, because of brave journalists, tireless activists, compassionate doctors, nurses, and other healthcare professionals. The rising generation of young Americans is the most pro-life in decades because they know too. And one day soon, we will reaffirm our nation's principles in their dignified fullness and avow once again that all men are created equal. All are entitled to life.
With inflation constantly chewing away at the value of paper money, perhaps it's time for Americans to bite back. Ownership of gold and silver coins provides great counterbalance to weaker paper money value. U.S. Coin Capital provides physical gold and silver coins. You can reach us directly at 1-800-878-2646, uscoincapital.com.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
Molesting your earballs one more time. It's the Krieger Files with your host, Dave Krieger.
Okay, we're spending the last 12 minutes here with Fred Jastrzebski from uscoincapital.com. 1-800-878-2646 is the number to call. If you want to take advantage of Fred's deal, he's got going on right now. You get 1/10 ounce $5 gold coin along with 20 Peace dollars graded AU, which is just below the MS category, and that's for $1,050. That is a deal, folks, in anybody's book, and that means that the premium per ounce. How much does a peace dollar weigh, Fred?
A peace dollar weighs an ounce.
All right.
They're made of, 0.77 pure ounces of silver. The balance of the coin is the other materials that are in it, but they're 1 ounce size coins, and again, they generally carry a little bit more of a premium than dimes and quarters, but similarly to what has happened with the dimes and quarters, the same thing has happened with the dollar-sized coins as well. Premiums are much lower than they've been. So this is just a great way to accumulate really beautiful quality coins that are, they're 100 years old, and they're nearly mint condition. It's just a safe, simple method for acquiring silver. It's constitutionally issued money, which is how I believe people should own their physical metals. Because I love the idea that no matter what, they could never make any more of these things. Not only are they made of silver and minted by the U.S. government and our country's legal currency, but cannot be reproduced. So if demand grows for them, the values will continue to grow above and beyond as the years march forward. So I think we should definitely try to take advantage of this temporary situation where the premiums have been reduced, because in the 40 years I've been doing this, this is only the second time I've ever seen this happen, and I've never seen it as extensive as it is right now. Plus, I think the unfortunate other side of the coin, no pun intended, is the rate at which we are about to print money as a country is going to rapidly accelerate, because the government debt is climbing very rapidly, regardless of what choices the new administration makes. In fact, their budget plan calls for an additional almost $5.7 trillion added to the national debt. A lot of this will stimulate economic activity, but it comes at a cost. And unfortunately for the government, this is basically how they have to do it. You know, you constantly refer to kicking the can down the road. Nobody wants to address the issue in the short term because that's painful. So instead, you do short-term things that make the economy look better, make people feel better, but cost you more money down the road, and then you worry about it then. And I've been listening to this garbage since the first time we crossed $1 billion in national debt, and people were absolutely freaking out about the fact that the U.S. was carrying $1 billion. Well, now we're carrying $35 trillion. And by the way, that's 1,000-fold larger than $1 billion. So, you know, the sizes of the numbers now. I mean, if you had told people in the 60s and 70s that at some point the U.S. would have $35 trillion in debt, they would have thought by this point we would have been a third-world nation, you know, that we would be looking like Argentina. It was just, it would have been horrific. And yet here we are. We have survived this because it's been the froggy in the pot of slowly rising water temperature, as opposed to dropping the frog in the boiling hot water. By doing this slowly over time, the public accepts this notion of reduced value in their currency. We did see a lot of pushback, though, last year or this year when inflation hit. I think the peak was roughly 9%. And there were a lot of Americans who'd never seen that before. They grew up in generations where we never had interest rates higher than 4 or 5%. And at one point, we had zero from the Fed. So this was a shock to a lot of people. And I think they need to get used to the idea that that is really much more normal than what we've experienced since COVID the past few years. It's been an aberration and is not likely to survive the way it is now for long, but it does mean that there's something that we can take advantage of. So I would be moving paper money into physical assets rapidly now because I see the physical assets going up in price, and I see the purchasing power of that paper dramatically being reduced over the next few years.
Well, see, and the thing is, too, is that Trump has already said, look, I know, you know, we have taken the cost into consideration. You got $220 million being paid for illegal immigrants, which Trump is going to move a slew of these millions of illegal immigrants out of the country, starting with the criminal element and working his way inward as ICE and the local law enforcement and the military find where these people are and move them out of the country. And that comes at a cost. And I would imagine you've got 20, you know, what, 11 million people, 14 million people. I mean, it's going to take probably the better part of, I don't know, I'm going to say about $5,000 a piece to move out of here. I mean, it's not going to be a cheap date, folks. And I'm looking at silver and gold because of the fact that the more money they generate while they're kicking the can down the road trying to remove the problem that Biden created with Trump and with what Tom Homan is doing right now, which is what's got the cartels all worked up, threatening Homan and Trump both because they don't want to leave the country. They like the fentanyl. They like the sex trafficking. They like all that. They like the crime. They like to be able to go out and be emboldened and, you know, kill off one Lake and Riley after another. I mean, the thing is that we the people have to put up with this, knowing that the dollar, the more of it they issue, Fred, the price starts going down. The value of the dollar starts to shrink. And that means that we, the people, need to start investing in something that's not going to shrink, but it's actually going to take off in value. Where do you see silver and gold going when Trump takes over next year and all this money starts flowing out of the treasury into the market?
The magic question, what happens tomorrow? So, you know, it's a difficult decision to say this is exactly how it's going to play out because there are too many variables that come into play that we don't know of going forward. But I can say one thing with absolute certainty. There is no way the government cannot increase the amount of money that exists in the system moving forward, and that's going to happen more rapidly than the expansion of the economy to absorb it. which means we're left with an inflationary problem. It's inevitable. There's simply no way around it anymore. There's no political option left because the problem has gotten so big that you can't just simply make political choices and solve it in a heartbeat like you could have maybe 30 years ago. And that means that we're going to have to see higher prices for gold and silver. I think, you know, we probably exceeded my expectations this year on both metals by probably 10%. Because I was doing the math, looking at the amount of money that they were printing, dividing that by the quantities of gold and silver that exist, and the relative value of money. You can kind of, you know, extrapolate that. So I think this translates into, you know, if we're not looking at $50 silver in the next decade and $3,500 to $5,000 gold in the next decade as absolutely normal, I would be rather surprised. And again, now, I remember when we were talking about silver at $3.50 and $4 an ounce, and gold when it was $3.50 and $3.80 an ounce, and we were having these same conversations about, well, what's going to happen to the price of gold if they just keep doing this? And we said, well, you know, you're going to have a gold go to $1,000, and silver's going to be $10. And everybody said, wow, geez. Well, here we are now. Silver is $30 an ounce, and gold is $2,670. It is going to continue to become more valuable, especially the coins that are fixed in their supply have to become more expensive against an ever-increasing supply of paper money. So unless something happens that stops this massive printing of money, which I don't see as a possibility, we're going to continue to have to see higher prices for gold and silver coins over the next 5 years, and that makes it very beneficial for those acquiring it today, not only to protect their wealth from, you know, not having done this to see it lose value, but also they would get the benefit of the increasing value in what they've purchased and profit from that.
And, of course, you can, as time progresses, you can, folks, if you need to convert back to dollars, you know, Fred, I'm sure, would not want to do that, but Fred will do that if you had to convert it back into dollars. But the thing is that the only reason that the dollar exists right now is because of the full faith and credit of the United States, which is not the government. It's we, the people, that put our faith in it because we have a wallet full of these things and we go around handing these debt notes to each other. The thing is that if people realize what you just said comes to fruition, Fred, the market is going to contract. And I'm talking about silver. I'm talking about the quantity of the silver that's out there because people are finally waking up and realizing, hey, if I don't invest in something like this right now for the future, when the future gets here and the dollar is worthless, I've got nothing to fall back on that I can take and use as a medium of exchange in a country whose currency is constantly being challenged. I mean, when you talk about a contraction of quantity, this is something that could eventually take place where there is no more other than what they're minting out of the gate right now, like the, you know, Canadian silver dollars or the you know, the coins that everybody says has 0.999.
Sure.
Fine.
So
I mean, that's the only thing.
Yes, you've got two parts of the silver market. You've got the brand new production coming out, and that means that this is new silver being mined, being minted into brand new coins. And that can only continue if they can keep mining enough silver to meet the current demand. The demand and supply characteristics for silver, as we speak right now, are about at parity. In other words, we're barely able to produce quantities of silver enough to meet the current demand. I mean, it is tight. Any uptick in demand for any reason at all could wipe out supply so rapidly that we could be stuck for quite a while without an increase in supply. Secondly, you have the original silver coins, like the peace dollars I'm referring to, or the old dimes and quarters, where they already stopped minting those things. It was 1964 the last time they even made one of these. So these supplies can dry up in a heartbeat and leave an average person without the ability to get these. The only people that would have access would be the wealthiest of Americans because, you know, they would have the leverage. So I encourage every American to try to get a little bit of gold and silver in your portfolio. They'll be happy to do this.
For sure. Well, there you go. 1-800-878-2646. Get on the phone right now and call Fred and get yourself stocked up because you just never know the way this economy is going. And now they basically put a hedge fund manager in as nominee of the Treasury. I mean, here we go. It's like having Hank Paulson all over again. And you know what happened in 2008, folks. Need I say more? I will be back live on Thursday. In the meantime, Stay safe, God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.